from Hockey Abstract. Hello, Rob. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm very good. Your piece on ESPN.com this week is on just that, the Calder Trophy race between Connor McDavid and Artemi Panarin. So I guess just give us a little bit of a rundown. What's the piece about, and how are you feeling on this particular topic?
Well, first of all, I really do see the race, like most people, as being between Panarin and McDavid. There are, of course, other great rookies out there, but that's really the article is just on those two.
Mm-hmm.
And there really is a very different argument that people are making between them. Like in one case, you got McDavid having only played 45 games. So is that really enough to judge him as the most proficient rookie in the year? And the keyword there is proficient. That's the language of the award. And on the flip side, you've got Panarin. And a lot of people, what they're arguing about for Panarin is that he's already played close to 300 games as a professional hockey player prior to coming to the NHL. Is it really appropriate to vote for him instead of a legitimate teenager like McDavid? So first of all, how do you see it?
Well, for me, and I understand the kind of hesitation on Panarin, but for me, Panarin played an entire year. He ran away with the rookie scoring lead. He was almost a point per game in his first year in the NHL, and I know that he had plenty of time in the KHL prior to coming over, but for me, the Calder Trophy is the best season by a rookie. Not necessarily who was the most impactful rookie, but who had the best season as a rookie. And because Panarin played the entire season, if I had a vote, he'd get my first place nod, and McDavid would be number two. That's where I am on it, but what about you?
Well, I think there's a strong argument both ways. First, let me say I have no problem with the fact that Panarin played all those games in the KHL prior to the NHL because, first of all, again, the wording of the award is the word rookie doesn't appear. It says first year in the NHL. And really, the only player that was ever really disqualified was Wayne Gretzky from the old World Hockey Association.
Mm-hmm.
There have been plenty of players that came from the old Soviet League, from the Russian Super League, from the KHL, from the top Swedish League, from the top Finnish League, from the AHL, from all over, and they still won the Calder. So I've got no problem with that. The reason I lean a little bit more towards McDavid is the award doesn't go to whoever contributed the most or whoever was the most valuable. It's the most proficient. And so to me, the question is, did McDavid prove in 45 games, was that enough evidence, whether you use the eyeballs or whether you use stats, was that enough evidence that he is a more proficient player than Panarin? And I ran a few numbers, and quite frankly, with 48 points in 45 games, that means over a complete season, McDavid would have finished from anywhere between 79 and 96 points over a full season.
Mm-hmm.
And that entire range is higher than Panarin actually performed, which is 77. Any other year, Panarin surely is the rookie of the year, but this is just one of those rare seasons where he's up against a generational talent, and I give the edge to McDavid.
So how important is it in your eyes for McDavid to have played a full 82 game or closer to a full 82 game season as opposed to the full season that Panarin ended up playing?
You see, I think McDavid just barely proved it. If he had played slightly fewer games, it just wouldn't have been enough evidence. If he had played more, it would have been crystal clear. But as it is, here's an interesting stat. He finished second in the NHL in even strength scoring rate, not among rookies. I mean, among everybody. 2.69 points per 60 minutes. Jagr just barely beat him out for the league lead. With a man advantage, I believe he was fourth or fifth. And by the way, this is playing for the Edmonton Oilers, one of only six teams to fail to score 200 goals. Hmm. Whereas all the other guys on that leaderboard, they all played for Chicago or Washington or Pittsburgh or a powerhouse team. So I really think that you've got to recognize the fact that McDavid had those amazing numbers. And furthermore, if you look at how Eberle and Pouliot scored without McDavid, and then their scoring rates with McDavid, you can just see the tremendous impact that McDavid has. And I think that's enough to satisfy me, and I think a lot of the voters, that McDavid is more proficient than Panarin.
Yeah, and I mean, look, you're going to get no argument for me that McDavid wasn't the best rookie to play in the NHL this year, because he was. I think McDavid is a generational talent and had himself an incredible rookie year. It comes down to, is it more about the entire body of work? And then it also comes down to, and this is one that I'll bounce off you right now, Rob, how important is it, and when talking about the word proficient, how important is it to be able to play a full season, to have that type of durability? Because I think I think that kind of plays into the conversation as well. Not to say it's a skill necessarily, but I do think that you have to put some sort of weight on being able to go through an entire NHL season, which McDavid was not able to do.
Yeah, well, that's not through any fault of his own. I mean, injuries happen. To me, was there enough evidence? I mean, if he'd only played 30 games and he tore it up, I'm like, yeah, he tore it up for 30 games, but you just don't know for a fact you would have done that over a full 82. But looking at how he did over 45, statistically, we can calculate confidence intervals. And there's enough data now, whether you use eyeballs or whether you use spreadsheets, there's enough data now to show that, yes, he is, and he did have a more impactful season than Panarin. Not in terms of overall contributions, because Panarin played more games, but that's not what the award says. In a perfect world, the award would actually say, you know, whoever contributed the most, and it would also have a cutoff. You can't be 20-something years old. It's just for teenagers or 20 at the most. But the wording of the award is what it is, and I think neither player can be disqualified. And I think McDavid has the edge, although, as you can read from the article, there's a strong argument both ways.
So if you had a vote right now, and obviously these two guys would be first or second, who would get your first place vote? McDavid?
Yeah, I'm going to go McDavid, but I'm not going to argue with someone who went Panarin. I think there's a strong case both ways.
And that's kind of where I am, too. I would go Panarin, but I mean, if McDavid wins, if I can't sit here and say that's ridiculous, because the guy's incredible. It's just, it's really, because there is... You talk about the wording of the award. There is still some gray area in the wording, and it leaves it open to interpretation. And that's why this conversation to me is so fascinating. Really good article on ESPN.com from Rob Volman, who joins us on Hockey Abstract right now. It's going to be one of Panarin or McDavid. Who should it be, winning Rookie of the Year? I very much encourage you to go give it a read. Mr. Volman, we have that conversation, which is one of my favorite conversations in a long time. And then we've got the conversation of what's going on the ice right now. The San Jose Sharks get set to play Game 6 of the Western Conference Final tonight, and they're one win away from a Stanley Cup Final for the first time in their history. Now, during the regular season, this is a Sharks team that, especially from about December on, was one of the better analytic teams in the National Hockey League. So, them being a win away from the Stanley Cup, or from playing for a Stanley Cup, is this where they should be? Is this where they're supposed to be, knowing what they're capable of?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I was at a hockey analytics conference with a lot of the top statisticians just before the playoffs, and they all ran their numbers, and I was surprised how universally people were predicting San Jose. And I think the difference is, when you just run the numbers, you're not affected by things like, oh, the reputation that the Sharks are chokers, or that they don't show up in the playoffs, or that there's something that happens to Joe Thornton or Patrick Marleau or something in the playoffs. You're just looking at the facts. You're just looking at the objective details that can be measured and counted. And from that, when you just look at it that way, the Sharks were absolutely one of the top contenders for the Stanley Cup this year. So I don't think it should be a surprise that right now they're in a position to do it.
So what has allowed them to do it this year? Because by and large, this core group hasn't changed a whole lot. And I know that there have been a lot of changes in some of the peripheral pieces, but even going back to last year's non-playoff team and this year's team that's in Game 6 of a Western Conference Final, not a ton of difference in terms of the roster. So what's been the biggest difference, or the biggest differences as to why they are where they are?
Well, they've always been a strong team for years. And, you know, there's always... So maybe they run into some bad luck, or they go through a really cold streak and that hurts them in the regular season. But they did make some important changes. I mean, obviously the goaltending, you've got to be impressed, you know, at their new goaltending combination. Well, especially with Jones, I think picking up Paul Martin on the blue line was a great move. And they already had Vlasic, picking up Paul Martin, and that really freed up Brent Burns. So I think really unleashed his full potential. And, of course, you got to hand it to the veterans up front, all of them, whether it's Pavelski and Thornton, who were in the regular season possibly one of the league's best lines, and that continued into the playoffs. And, of course, Logan Couture, just also being fully unleashed by the fact that you have other players like Pavelski and Thornton carrying some of the heavier minutes. So, really, it's a team effort, and some of those roster changes they made had sort of compound effects further down the lineup, and I think that's been the secret.
He is Rob Volman from Hockey Abstract, joins us every Wednesday at this time here on the big show on Sportsnet 96 of the Fan. Rob, both the Penguins and the Blues have made goaltending changes in this series. With the Penguins, it went Murray to Fleury, back to Murray, and in St. Louis, it went Elliott, and then Allen for two, and then back to Brian Elliott for game six tonight. How have you kind of viewed, or have you agreed with the way these two teams have handled their goaltending situations?
Well, you know, with Pittsburgh, it's one situation because Fleury, of course, was dealing with injuries. So you go with the healthy hand. Matt always had the pedigree. He always had the stats that one day he was going to be a strong NHL goalie. The surprise is just that he was able to do that right away as a rookie with no NHL experience. And obviously, you keep when he's playing that well, you stay with him. The St. Louis situation is different just because Brian Elliott led the league in save percentage for the second time in five seasons. He's really one of the unheralded goalies of the NHL, and I think you stick with him no matter what. There really was no reason to switch to Jake Allen. I think you just keep going with Brian Elliott. But, you know, it's not like there's a big difference. I mean, both teams have a couple of strong goalies, and for that matter, look what's happening in Tampa Bay. You think losing Ben Bishop would derail them? Well, you know, their backup, Vasilevsky's actually been doing very well too. So I think that just goes to show you the importance of having a good backup.
So then let me take it a little bit further, because I find I really like the way that you have framed kind of a good way to go about targeting a goaltender in the offseason, a good way that, you know, a team like the Calgary Flames, for instance, needs a upgrade in their goaltending situation. And I've always kind of enjoyed the way that you kind of look at it analytically. So we know that Matt Murray is having an outstanding postseason. We know that, you know, the most important game of their year is tomorrow, Game 7, and Matt Murray's going to get the start. So what about Marc-Andre Fleury this summer? Is he a guy that you would target if you needed a number one goaltender or if you needed an upgrade between the pipes?
No, absolutely not. First of all, my position has always been that there's always a wealth of great goalies, effective goalies, on the free agent market for $1 or $2 million. And I'm not saying that after the fact. On the show in the past, I said, hey, Devan Dubnyk is a great value, right? And that was back when he had that bad season. Came back, was a Vezina finalist for $800,000. Last summer, I was talking about Thomas Greiss. I talked about Nueverth. I talked about a bunch of goalies that were available for $1 or $2 million. They were all effective. I think you got to wait and look for one of those $1 or $2 million goalies. There's no reason to spend $3, $4, $5, or $6 million on a player like Marc-Andre Fleury, who's not that much better than the rest of them, and possibly worse. The only real value to Marc-Andre Fleury, I think, is he is highly effective in the shootout. So that gets you a few extra points in the regular season, but that's not worth several more million. So under really no circumstances would I pursue Marc-Andre Fleury.
So final question for you. Some other names that could, we don't know, but could be available if we were to get that far in the offseason in between the pipes. Brian Elliott's name has been thrown out there. Jake Allen's name has been thrown out there. You mentioned the name Andre Vasilevsky. Of those guys, who kind of jumps off the page to you is would be a really good target to go after?
You know, there's a lot of really good stats to measure goalies. It's not just save percentage. We've got all sorts of great stats like quality starts and how goalies do in that home plate area. In fact, it's that last stat that helped us find guys like Greiss and Dubnyk, how goalies do in the home plate area. However, among the names that you listed, I think if you can actually get Brian Elliott for a similar contract to what he currently has, I mean, that's amazing. For 5 years in St. Louis, he's been a steady goalie for barely over $2 million. Twice he's led the league in save percentage. So I think if you can get a goalie like that for a price like that, that's great. If you can't get him for that price, then you're better off finding someone just as good or maybe a touch worse. Save the money and invest that in on your blue line.
Good stuff, Rob. You can find Rob Volman on Twitter, at Rob Volman NHL. You can find him on HockeyAbstract.com, ESPN.com, and a whole lot of other spots as well. Good conversation today, as always, my friend. Thanks for doing it. We'll do it again next Wednesday, hey?
Yeah, you bet. Enjoy the game tonight. Going to be a good one.